Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
It's the Media Buzz Meter with Howard Kurtz.
Le sexe scandale is not only the province of Les Americains. Gérard Depardieu, the famous French actor, will be tried for sexual harassment, sexual assault, according to French prosecutors. Now, there have been more than a dozen women who have accused this guy, many decades from the peak of his fame, of harassment, groping, assault. He put out a statement last year saying, "Never, ever have I abused a woman." But on the set of a movie called The Green Shutters, the decorator on the set accused Depardieu of grabbing her and kneading her waist, stomach, and breasts during the filming. Also, another French outlet reporting that on the same shoot, 33-year-old woman accused him of touching her chest and buttocks, and there were corroborating witnesses. So this will play out not like one of his movies, let's put it that way. I want to start with story number one by telling you that yesterday I was down at the Washington Bureau. I was sitting on the set waiting to get on Martha McCallum's show when Donald Trump, with a rare day off from the Hush Money trial, was holding the first of two rallies. This one was in Wisconsin, later on in Michigan. And first of all, he was just having a good time talking about anything other than the case. So of course, he talked about that as well. Now, during that rally, Trump went off on the campus protests. Radical leftists, weak administrators, talked about Columbia. And then he said, why isn't Joe Biden addressing this? Why aren't we hearing from him? Question I've spent a lot of time asking the last few days, including on yesterday's podcast. So when Fox broke away from the rally, we talked about that. And I got into a bit of a debate with one of the other guests who said, look, you know, Columbia did the right thing. They called in the police. The police seized Hamilton Hall and made a bunch of arrests. And I said, no, this should have been done a week ago. And there wouldn't have been a takeover of Hamilton Hall like there was in 1968. Same building, actually 56 years to the day. You don't get credit for waiting so long that you've lost control of your campus. And by the way, Columbia has just gone to total remote learning for these last couple of weeks of the semester. So students who want to go to class, who are either paying or their parents are paying a lot of money for them to attend this Ivy League school, well, tough luck. Essentially, the campus has been shut down. I mean, if you're a student with a valid student ID, now that the authorities are back in control and all these arrests have been made, you can walk on the campus, but you can't go to class. It's all just like it was during the pandemic. And now, finally, President Biden has stepped before the cameras and denounced the violent protests on campus. Should have done it 9 days ago, 10 days ago. Clearly, he had been pressured into doing it, not just by the media, but by fellow Democrats. You know, the White House kept saying, well, you know, he's carefully monitoring the situation. That's not what was needed. Or in addition to that, you've got to address the country. So this was added to his schedule after the daily schedule that they put out to the press was originally issued. So clearly it was a last-minute decision. And the president said the following. Believes in free speech, but the rule of law must be upheld. We're not an authoritarian nation. We don't squash dissent, but we're not a lawless country. Order must prevail. Even as I'm reading these words, I'm thinking, yes, it's about time. Violent protest is not peaceful protest, said Joe Biden. Destroying property is not peaceful protest. Breaking windows, threatening people, intimidating people is against the law. All strong statements, all statements that could have been delivered last week or before. What was so hard about saying these words? I give him credit. He's doing it, but clearly he was pushed to do it. He was forced to do it. He was embarrassed into doing it. And he should do it again and again. He should talk about this every day. Power of repetition. He then kind of tried to make the distinction again. There's a right to protest, but not the right to cause chaos. There's no place in America for anti-Semitism or threats of violence against Jewish students. Or, he said, against Palestinian students. So he was trying to walk a bit of a tightrope, not saying people can't gather anywhere, including campuses, and engage in peaceful protest. But it's obvious to anybody, no matter what your view on the war is, that this has not been peaceful protest. I'm going to read that sentence again. There's no place in America or anywhere on college campuses for anti-Semitism or threats of violence against Jewish students. Period. I am glad to see President Biden finally address these out-of-control campuses. Why on earth he deliberately stayed away from the cameras or was going around talking about, you know, economic initiatives and not addressing what's become the hottest issue in America, I don't know, but I'm glad he finally did it. Now, a lot of developments on a lot of other schools, and let me say this, especially in the context of nothing from the president, but also in the broader context. Every single day, you turn on the TV now and you see the latest footage of violence on these campuses, of police making arrests on these campuses, of, as at UCLA, protesters and counter-protesters engaging in violence. And not only are these in and of themselves disturbing images, disturbing video, but it's all become localized now. There's so many schools, big and small, red state, blue state, famous, not so famous, that in many of these areas, you know, it's the huge story. It's the number one story. It's not just a story about some elite campus in Upper Manhattan. It's come to your state. It's come to your county. It's come to your town. So it's the big story on the local news. And when you think about it, that's part of what is driving this. Also, because the footage is either dramatic or tense, you know, if you've got a bunch of cops who, by the way, are the only ones who look good here because they're doing their job when they're allowed to do their job. And anti-Israel protesters on the other, or Jewish students trying to get to class. It's a very visual story. So you think back to other scandalous stories. Let's just say the savings and loan crisis, where a bunch of banks went belly up. But there weren't as important a story as there was, that was, and there was so much money at stake, and there were people worrying about losing their savings. The government protected people, most of them. But no dramatic pictures. So this story is localized. It's across the country. It's playing out like a revolution almost. So early this morning, middle of the night, California time, in the dark, finally, police came in to dismantle the pro-Palestinian encampment at UCLA. This is after an hours-long standoff. LAPD officers tearing through barricades, pulling apart plywood and other materials that the protesters had used to build a wall around themselves. Like, all this went on, and the schools did nothing. Multiple protesters were arrested. Others were resisting. Some are reported to have been spraying officers with what appeared to be fire extinguishers. I'm sorry, like, you know, you got a bunch of unarmed students, maybe armed with fire extinguishers, and they're taking on the local police? Isn't that sort of the definition of insanity? So initially, UCLA, same thing at Columbia, say, oh, we're going to be tolerant. You know, we're going to talk to these people. Then they declared it illegal. Then there was the standoff. The chancellor of the school saying the counter-protesters, which I referenced earlier, were instigators. And there's no question there were some outside agitators involved in these clashes. New York Mayor Eric Adams said, oh, a lot of outside agitators, but he couldn't name how many. And it turns out that only two of the people arrested at Columbia when the school finally, and its embattled president, Manoush Shafiq, said, we can't tolerate this anymore, about 2 weeks too late, allowed the police to come onto campus. You also have arrests being made at University of Texas at Dallas. Originally, it was just the Austin campus. At Dartmouth College in New Hampshire. At Tulane University in New Orleans. And it spread to other New York City campuses, including Fordham University, which has a campus in Manhattan. Fordham, the third university in the city now, after Columbia. Oh, and City College of New York, which is up in Harlem, at least this particular campus of the City University, where mass arrests were made over a 24-hour period. Earlier, it was NYU. So, back at UCLA, police tried to enter a staircase leading to the encampment, but protesters had blocked them with wooden pallets and homemade shields, and they chanted, cops go home. 90 protesters arrested at Dartmouth for criminal trespass, resisting arrest. More than 1,300 protesters taken into custody recent couple days at City College of New York. The arrest took place after some of these demonstrators tried to take over an administrative building. Like, this is now the new escalation. You can't just protest. You can't just set up tents. You can't just illegally block access to others. You got to seize a building, or, like, how serious are you? And, you know, I still have to chuckle when the woman, not that any of this is funny in any way, but it's been the subject of a lot of mockery. When a woman speaking on behalf of the anti-Israel protesters at Columbia came out and said, could you send some food in? And one reporter said, so you break all the rules, you break the law, you take over this building, and now you expect to be fed? And then you have this picture, because they set up a pulley alongside the ladder that enabled them to break in through a second story window. And they put a pizza box on this. They just figure, well, yeah, DoorDash will come, or maybe we'll just get Uber Eats. But the pizza box was too big, so I guess they had to settle for sandwiches. The revolution will be catered. Brown University. Some de-escalation there as protesters dismantled their encampment. At Cal Poly, the campus in Humboldt, police ended an 8-day occupation. L.A. Mayor Karen Bass calling for a full investigation of what she called the absolutely detestable violence at UCLA. Governor Gavin Newsom, the right to free speech does not extend to inciting violence, vandalism, or lawlessness on campus. Those who engage in illegal behavior must be held accountable for their actions, including through criminal prosecution, suspension, or expulsion. You wonder, like, what does it take to get kicked out of some of these schools? Now, these are Democrats, Gavin Newsom, Karen Bass. They've had enough. It's not just a right-left battle here. And those who believe in free speech, those who believe in peaceful protest, I'm one of them. But you got to do it by the rules. And you can't set up a bunch of illegal tents. And you can't harass students who want to go to class. And you can't battle the cops. You know, I've mentioned frequently that I got my journalism degree, master's in journalism at Columbia. And it was a calm time on campus, some years removed from the 68 takeover of Hamilton Hall. But I've got to say, I feel like it's been tainted. The reputation of Columbia now? Unbelievable.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped. Streaming June 4th. Only on Hulu.
And listen to this. Northwestern University. President there, Michael Schill, made a deal with protesters. What's the deal? Boy, talk about caving. Full scholarships to Palestinian students, guaranteed faculty jobs for Palestinian academics. University commits to fundraise to sustain this program beyond the current commitment. Also, provide a house for Muslim students and advise employers not to rescind job offers for students engaged in speech protected by the First Amendment. The ADL said this is reprehensible. Failed leadership. For days, protesters violated campus codes of conduct and policies. Fan the flames of hate and anti-Semitism. And that this Illinois campus has now declared itself a safe space for anti-Semitism, according to the Anti-Defamation League. I mean, it's not that I'm against scholarships for Palestinians or things like that, but let's face it, they're being rewarded. Not all of them, because not all of them participated. But the ones who did participate, the faculty members, the schools giving them money, I'm just shaking my head. All right, story number two. There's a lot about Joe Biden, not just that he's not speaking out on this. And here's National Review editor Rich Lowry saying, he goes through a lot of polls. And he says it's not just that Biden's job approval is low. He's trailing Trump on the crucial metric of who was or is a successful president. I think this really gets at something, because you can take 150 polls and, you know, who's got the best rating on abortion and who's got the best rating on the economy and all that. But according to a CNN poll, 55% of the public now considers, you know, with the benefit of hindsight and maybe partial amnesia, the Trump presidency to have been a success. Biden, only 39% now, the incumbent president of the United States, say his tenure has been a success. 61% say it's been a failure. Well, I don't need to hear any other numbers. I mean, that is abysmal. Larry goes on to say, people have all kinds of expectations for presidents, that they not get indicted, that they not post on Truth Social in all caps, that they accept the results of elections, et cetera, et cetera. But the most important one, surely, is that they succeed at the job. Being considered a failed president is not a status consistent with winning election, winning re-election. Trump's history and personal radioactivity give Biden a lot of material to work with. The problem is a lot of this, even on these legal prosecutions, feel irrelevant, says Lowry, compared with the question of whom people trust to do a good job as president. And in addition, people don't particularly like him. Well, a lot of Democrats like him, but look, also a lot of Democrats didn't want him to be the nominee. Also, a lot of Democrats are concerned about his age, which, of course, is inextricably intertwined with the question of whether he's got what it takes to do the job. And he's got 6 months to turn it around. So what is Biden doing? Well, AG Merrick Garland announcing yesterday that marijuana is being downgraded to a lower schedule under federal law. It's not legalization, and in many places it's not even enforced, but one Democratic strategist quoted by the Washington Post is saying, the people who are the biggest fans of this are those around the president. And they recognize that this seemingly controversial issue is incredibly popular. Now, the way it breaks down, here's a Gallup poll from last year. 70% of the country supports recreational legalization, but that's only 55% among Republicans. Okay, well, Biden's probably not getting most of those votes. He's trying very hard to win back younger people, where he's far less ahead of Trump than he was in 2020. So this puts it, rather than a Schedule I drug, where marijuana was in the same class as heroin and LSD, it puts it in Schedule III, which is prescription drugs like ketamine, steroids, and testosterone. Tell you one thing, when I was in college, and not protesting because there were no protests at that time, if the president had, in effect, legalized marijuana, would have won 95%. Of the youth vote, as it's called. But that president was Richard Nixon, and so that was not going to happen. It was a war on drugs. Another related campaign story, RFK Jr. The Trump people are starting to get concerned about RFK Jr., even though I continue to believe that since he's got the Kennedy name, even though he's not running as a Democrat, that he will hurt Joe Biden more. But Politico says he's increasingly making frequent appearances on conservative media outlets and talking to Ben Shapiro, Glenn Beck, Megyn Kelly, Newsmax. He's been on Fox a number of times. And Chris LaCivita, Trump's co-campaign manager, says it's concerning and beyond logic that there are some conservative platforms that continue to give a voice to someone who has called the NRA a terrorist group, who believes in eliminating gas-powered engines, who believes in a 70% tax bracket, and generally subscribes to the same school of thought as Karl Marx. And Trump, this past weekend, said he's a Democratic plant, far more liberal than anyone running as a Democrat, and a vote for Junior would be a wasted protest vote. So there's more here than just the Trump camp getting concerned. Here's what they're doing. In a resurfaced video, resurfaced by the Trump team, RFK Jr. is seen saying this in a 2005 speech. Red state people are more likely to murder you, to impregnate your teenage daughter, to commit a violent crime against you, to watch Desperate Housewives on TV. I don't know, is that in the same category? To buy pornography, to buy degenerate video games like Grand Auto Theft. Lumping in a lot of things there. Meanwhile, you remember how much national publicity this gotten. The 1864 virtual all complete ban on abortion in Arizona, upheld by the highest court there. And it was said that because Republicans control both chambers, this would not be repealed, despite Donald Trump wanting it repealed. Well, guess what? It has now been repealed because the Arizona State Senate voting yesterday to get rid of that Civil War era law. The Democratic governor expected signing it into law. The State House, two Republicans had defected. And yesterday, two Republicans in the State Senate joined Democrats in a 16-14 vote repealing the ban. I just think the pressure got to be too great. Even though only a couple of Republicans defected, that's all it took. I don't think the GOP in that state wanted to go into the November elections with a complete ban that also criminalizes the conduct for those involved in abortions. And the only exception was to save the life of the mother. Story three, Marjorie Taylor Greene. She laid down her cards yesterday. She's going to make her motion officially next week against Speaker Mike Johnson. However, the Democrats, led by Hakeem Jeffries, have made clear that they're going to try to rescue Johnson. So the Congresswoman says Mike Johnson is not capable of that job. He's proven it over and over again. Now we have Hakeem Jeffries, says MTG, coming out over and over again, embracing Mike Johnson with a warm hug and a big, wet, sloppy kiss. Give me a second to recover from that. They want to keep the band together. She said she was giving her fellow Republicans this weekend to reflect on it, and Johnson should pray on it, decide whether to resign as Speaker. I've been very measured. I'm not irresponsible, says MTG. It was a warning to stop serving the Democrats and support our Republican agenda. Johnson said this motion is wrong for the Republican conference, wrong for the institution, wrong for the country, and that, of course, he's not going to resign. In fact, he said, bless her heart. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about her. I've got to do my job, and we do the right thing, and we let the chips fall where they may, says the Louisiana lawmaker. And what's more, most Republicans don't want this because they don't want to go through the Kevin McCarthy scenario again. Have to pick yet another speaker, which would paralyze the House for at least a week, maybe longer. New York Times says that Kevin McCarthy, who I interviewed on Media Buzz a couple weeks ago, privately called Mike Johnson and offered to intervene with Marjorie on his behalf. But it didn't matter. It doesn't look like that happened. She's not going to be controlled by anybody. That's part of her brand. And so after being a key ally of then-Speaker McCarthy, she's back to her old playbook, says this New York Times piece, which is basically building her own brand by saying things that are going to get a lot of attention. Some people would call them inflammatory. Her rhetoric and behavior generates viral social media content that keeps her where she most likes to be, in front of a camera.
Hey, let's pause right there. The buzz meter continues right after this.
Story four, columnist Jack Schaefer. Going back to Joe Biden's White House correspondents' dinner speech, mostly jokes, many of them aimed at Trump. But says the political columnist, he finished, the president did, by saying, you got to rise up to the seriousness of the moment, move past the horse race numbers and the gotcha moments and the distractions, the sideshows that have come to dominate and sensationalize our politics, and focus on what's actually at stake. And Schaefer says, was there anybody in the audience, meaning journalists, who hasn't been taking Trump seriously? Which mainstream publication represented in the crowd has failed to smother Trump's resurrection and authoritarian bluster with seriousness? I mean, it takes a little shot at Fox. Either you're covering the campaign seriously, meaning reporting out how dangerous Trump is, or you're covering it frivolously, by publishing and analyzing poll data, or revealing the Biden administration's mistakes, or publishing stories that embarrass the administration. It's a false choice. It's an either-or proposition. And what doesn't deserve slack, says Schaefer, is the jawboning contained in Biden's speech about not paying attention to horse race numbers and gotcha moments. For a politician to ask the press to downplay the horse race, when politicians rank among the most dedicated clients of pollsters, oozes hypocrisy. The disdain gotcha moments, when every campaign deploys them against opponents, is more of the same. And he's right. You can't fault Biden too much for urging the press to choose broccoli over Pop-Tarts. But a journalist can say, why not both? And finally, number five, Paul Fahrey, who was a reporter for the Washington Post for many, many years, old colleague of mine, covered a lot of media stuff, and particularly after I left. Well, he said yesterday that he has won a battle with his former newspaper over being suspended back in 2022 for accurately reporting about the Post. He's now writing, I guess, among other places, for The Atlantic. So Fahrey tweeted a couple years ago some internal news. In response to Putin's threats against reporters in Russia, the Washington Post will remove bylines and datelines from stories produced by our journalist in Russia. Goal is to ensure staff's safety. And he added, been around a while, never seen anything like this. So it wasn't a, you know, jumping up and down or criticizing the Washington Post. He just says, look, here's the facts. The Post is going to remove bylines and datelines from stories based by Washington Post journalists in Russia. The suspension lasted 5 days without pay for Paul Fahrey, who also says he was suspended without discussion or any chance to appeal. The union, the News Guild, filed a complaint on his behalf to force arbitration, finally won back that pay that he missed during that week, and got the Post to suspend this, to rescind the suspension retroactively. The Post defended it, blah, blah, blah. And he says this, look, he now says this. The Guild took the Post to court for unilaterally terminating a contractual right. The Guild lost at trial and appealed. Fahrey says now, not to pile on the Post, which I revere, but my tweet was a factual and accurate description of the Post's editorial policy, which the Post itself announced a few hours later. I think it's game, set, match to Paul Fahrey. If you say, hey, the paper's going to do this, without jumping up and down about it or ripping your bosses, and then the paper does it, that's called reporting. Well, thanks so much for sticking around. Try to find an interesting, compelling, and just plain fun mix of stories every day for you. See you tomorrow with more BuzzMeter.
Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts and via Apple Podcasts, and Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.